You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
Now the Supreme Court has handed down its judgment in the Prorogation of Parliament case, we bring you the latest episode from Catherine Barnard's podcast series 2903 CB. Professor Barnard gives her reaction to what she terms a robust judgment delivered by Lady Hale, the President of the Supreme Court. She goes on to discuss the role of the Attorney General and whether or not the architecture of the UK Constitution has been changed forever now. Bonnie Soames asks Catherine whether she was surprised by the strength of the wording of Lady Hale's judgment.
I think it is quite remarkable, the strength of the language. In our last podcast, we commented on the strength of the language used by the Scottish Court, and you see similar strong language by the Supreme Court, talking about the fact that by proroguing Parliament and not allowing for accountability to Parliament, the executive was undermining the fundamentals of our democracy, and that the effect on the fundamentals of our democracy was extreme. And that's Lady Hale's words.
It is a robust judgment, would you agree?
I'd certainly agree it's a robust judgment, but it's also a judgment written for the general public to read and understand. It is essentially an ABC of our constitution.
People are now asking who gave Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, the advice that he could legally prorogue Parliament. There's been a leak from Number 10, and it seems that it was the Attorney General, Geoffrey Cox. Is he now compromised as Attorney General?
Some people say he is. I think it's not so likely. He no doubt gave advice, best advice he could. He might have been mistaken not to hem it in with caveats. But it must be said, a lot of lawyers didn't think that Boris Johnson was acting unlawfully. They thought he was acting at the edge of what was constitutionally legitimate, but not over the edge. And so the very fact that Geoffrey Cox said something similar was certainly within the band of the sort of advice that lawyers might give. What's more remarkable is that Number 10 has been putting out this fact. Surely Number 10 should be backing its Attorney General, not undermining him.
People are also talking about the judgment, whether it was right or wrong. And indeed, Number 10 seems to have been telling political journalists that they're surprised by the 11 judges coming out unanimously against the government. There's been stronger wording used about our judgments. Are you concerned about criticism of the judiciary?
No, I'm not concerned about criticism of the judiciary, provided that the criticism relates to their legal analysis and their ruling, and provided that the criticism does not relate to the question about whether they're independent, which they are, and whether they're biased, which they are not. And one of the reasons why 11 judges sat was to try to preempt arguments that Judge X is pro-Remain and Judge Y is pro-Leave and Judge Z is pro-Labour. The fact is that they unanimously spoke, this range of judges, and they all concluded that the Prime Minister had acted unlawfully. It's a very strong judgment.
Now, constitutional lawyers abound on the airwaves at the moment. Lord Peter Hennessy has said that there's been an architectural shift in our constitution. It will never be the same again. And that conventions are now as important as statutes. The government is, in fact, a custodian for its tenure. It reports to Parliament. It's not in charge. Would you use those kind of descriptions to pronounce on the long-term impact of today's judgment on our constitution? Do we even know yet?
I wouldn't put it as strongly as to say it's a shift in the constitutional architecture, for the simple reason that the judges were very reluctant to get involved in these sorts of political decisions. And indeed, in Miller 1, that was the first case Gina Miller brought about whether you need an act of Parliament before Article 50 was triggered. The court said clearly that they would not rule on a convention. Now, I think what's happened in between times is that the Supreme Court justices have begun to see that politicians are prepared to really push at the boundaries of our Constitution. And I think the Supreme Court justices have looked over the edge and seen what the implications of this might be. You could imagine that another Prime Minister might decide to prorogue Parliament if the discussions in Parliament, the debates in Parliament, were not going his or her way. And the Supreme Court was having none of that because the Supreme Court said Parliament is sovereign, Parliament is accountable, i.e. the executive is accountable to Parliament, and therefore Parliament must sit so it can fulfil its functions.
Do you think then we need a written constitution or start to write down the principles of the constitution? We can no longer rely on what they call the good chap theory, that the monarch shouldn't be put in this position, and then no one would have ever compromised the monarch in this way, but they have.
Well, the judgment of the Supreme Court is very careful to try to avoid getting the Queen implicated in any way. And remember, the Queen always acts on the advice of her Prime Minister. She wasn't acting independently. And indeed, the Supreme Court didn't rule on what information had been given by Boris Johnson to the Queen. We can surmise, but we don't know. And what's rather clever about the Supreme Court's judgment is that it focuses on the effect of the decision to prorogue rather than the motives or the intention behind it. But in terms of a written constitution, inevitably, at a time of constitutional crisis, people say we need a written constitution. And then comes the practical decision of who's going to draft it, how's it going to be legitimated, and would it really have made a difference in this sort of case? Because we are in unique circumstances. Never before has a state attempted to leave the European Union, and therefore it's not clear that a written constitution really would have provided a template for matters such as this.
John Bercow, the Speaker, has called Parliament back tomorrow. He's been careful to say he's not recalling Parliament. It's a resumption for the House of Commons, including the bills that were dropped because Parliament was being prorogued, including one, the domestic violence bill, and there's also one on the courts, I believe. But how do you see it playing out in the next few days? The Fixed Term Parliament Act has a process, if indeed Boris Johnson did want to call a general election, or even if he wanted to put Jeremy Corbyn or anybody else in charge and stand aside. There's several ways in which it could now play out, isn't there?
So some people say, well, what's the point in Parliament going back to sitting, because it's very difficult to get any legislation through, even legislation which is not so controversial, such as the Bill on Domestic Violence. But of course, legislation is only one thing that Parliament does. What Parliament's return will mean is that Boris Johnson will have to reappear at the dispatch box and defend what the government is doing to prepare for no deal, to look at, there can be scrutiny as to what's meant by the alternatives to the backstop. And of course, crucially, the liaison committee will sit. Sarah Wollstone's already asked Boris Johnson to appear in front of that. So there will be scrutiny both of the executive and also scrutinising quite a lot of the statutory instruments which are being passed in order to try, prepare for, and if necessary, deliver on a no-deal Brexit. So there's quite a lot that they can get done. And that's essentially what the Supreme Court said. Parliament is there to scrutinise, and the executive must be held to account by Parliament.
You are a lawyer, a professor of law at Cambridge University. Were you surprised at the ease with which, unanimously, the Supreme Court judges said this was judiciable? Because the UK courts had said it wasn't. Lady Hale read out that since 1611 there's been cases of proclamations on the proroguing of Parliament. There is a public law history there. Why didn't we know that?
I think traditionally the courts have been very wary about interfering with executive decisions. They are conscious that the executive is democratically elected. Courts and judges are not. But we are living in unusual times, and what we're seeing is an overweening, overbearing executive and a significant significantly weakened parliament. There's no majority in parliament for the Conservatives and a highly divided opposition. And so the courts have felt obliged to step in. And certainly it is the case that courts in a modern democracy do not like to see any powers which are potentially unlimited. And so what you're seeing in this judgment is a statement that the courts are prepared to scrutinise the limits on the powers, and they will hear cases about limits on the powers of the executive.
In Europe, finally, Catherine, how do you think this is playing out? We've seen several tweets from European leaders seeming to be pleased that the Supreme Court has ruled against the government. But it doesn't make getting a deal any easier for any party, does it?
If anything, it makes it somewhat harder because it shows that the Prime Minister cannot be trusted. On the other hand, it also sends out, the judgment sends out a very good message that the court is prepared to take difficult decisions and they will hold the government to account. And certainly I was in Brussels yesterday and there was extreme interest in what the Supreme Court might do from colleagues from across Europe. This clearly is a big case and people are really interested.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much indeed for your time in your 2903 podcast. I don't think that we can have a crystal ball and even know what's going to be happening on Friday of this week, yet alone next week. But Boris Johnson sticking to his guns that we're leaving on the 31st of October 2019, do or die, despite the Supreme Court ruling. He's basically saying he's going to defy the law. He's not going to take note of the Benn bill ruling out a no deal. Do you read it like that?
Well, he might be implicitly threatening it, but I suspect the campaigners, Gina Miller included, may well be back before the courts sooner than we might think.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.